It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 526. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. I got two voicemails that I'm going to get to in a couple minutes. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and also facebook.com/Mike Tech Show, facebook.com/Mike Nation Net. We have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows, the audio, the show notes. It's a great resource. I have another jam-packed show. I have a lot of stories from the trenches and some tips that I want to share with you, and just some interesting little problems that I've come across. I also have the two voicemails that I mentioned, and I have a stack of email that I want to get to. So Instant House Call is the best service for remote support, and you can start providing remote support for your customers today with Instant House Call by going to the miketechshow.com website. Click on the link on the left-hand side, and it will take you directly to Instant House Call. Enter the promo code MikeTechShow, and you will receive 15 days free trial of the best software for remote support. It's got the D7 built in for auto repair, for eliminating viruses remotely. You have unattended mode. There are a ton of features that I take advantage of and use all the time. One of the best ones is that I can be on multiple computers at the same time, especially when you're troubleshooting networking and you're trying to figure out what's going on between a server and a workstation. I can be remoted into both. So that's a great way to troubleshoot. Check that out, instanthousecall.com. Don't forget to use the promo code MikeTechShow. Two announcements, and you need to take advantage of this right away, and I want to thank Kate for letting me know because I purchased this right away. The Crypto Prevent that I've talked about and mentioned strongly last week that you need to really put on your system to help prevent these ransomware viruses. The auto update version was normally $15. Right now, Nick, Foolish IT, has a Turkey Day discount through Monday. So if you're hearing this, you can get $9.99. You can buy the version that will get the auto updates, and you can install it on all of your home computers. That license is good for private use on all of your computers for just one price, $9.99. I purchased that a few days ago, and I've installed it on four of my systems here right now, the Auto Protect. See, you really have to do that for Crypto Prevent. So I wanted to mention that, and Kate, thank you for tweeting that to me. The next announcement, the next show will be December 11th. No show next week. I'll be back the following week, December 11th. I'll be recording. We have a special post-show planned. That special show, well, actually, it's not the show. It's going to be after the show. The post-show is going to be all Sinatra. Everybody who knows who hangs out in the post-show, we play music, I take tech questions. Well, that's going to be dedicated because Frank Sinatra would have turned 99 on December 12th. So in honor of that, I'm going to just play all Sinatra, and I have a large, large library of some very, very rare recordings. I know that's not tech, but we have a lot of fun in the post show, and if you like that, you want to mark that on your calendars for December 11th. One of the things that I enjoy with my largest client that I'm on site every Tuesday and Wednesday, this client, I am there at least 40 hours a month. And one of the things I enjoy on Tuesday morning is, since I've been there since Wednesday, we now have Thursday, Friday, Monday, where they've had no on-site IT support. And when I get in on Tuesday morning, I'm usually attacked with different little issues. The minute I get in, hang my coat up, I get my computer going, and before I even get coffee, I do my rounds on three areas: engineering, accounting, and sales. The three departments that will have the most issues or anything happening. I have to share what I was greeted with on Tuesday. I get my pad and paper, and I am hit with, first, I don't even get my coat off, and someone says, the CFO is looking for you. And I'm like, wow, okay. Then the purchasing manager is right on top of me and says, I have an Outlook problem. I need you to get over here right away. The first thing I do is go to the CFO. So we go by order of rank. And when I see the CFO, he says, you got to see so-and-so here in accounting. Nobody can scan or print to the main printer. And this is a Curacao, I think it's a 4150, nice machine, but nobody can scan. When they put a piece of paper in and try to scan, they get a network error. It comes up, network error, cannot complete the scan. Anybody who tries to print to it can't print. So clearly it's a network issue. So the first thing I want to do is let's test the network connection. I get my laptop and I plug it in, and I get full internet and I get an IP address. I know the network cable is working, and I know that network connection's working. I plug it into the printer, and I'm only getting a yellow light. I'm not getting a green light. So now I know it's this printer copier, probably. So I shut it off, and I notice something when I turn it off. The lights don't really go off. It just sort of, when you turn it off, it kind of goes into this sleep mode. And it's not 100% off. I click it back on, and yeah, it powers up. But all the lights did not go completely off when I hit the off button. So I'm still not able to scan. Now, before I place a call with the copier repair service, the company that managed, you know, there's an outside company that manages these because they are leased, these devices. They have two of them. I look for where the plug is, and I pull the plug on the printer. And the reason why I'm going through this is because sometimes just turning it off is not enough for these devices. I want a complete reset of everything. So I pull the power plug. Now, that light that I was seeing that was sort of on in the front, that's off. Everything's totally off. I wait about 60 seconds. I plug it back in, fire it up. Everything is working. Everything. I now go to test the scans. It's working. I go back to the accounting area. I say, printer's fixed. I move on to the Outlook problem. Purchasing manager cannot open any attachments from Outlook. That's kind of strange. I'm looking at this Outlook, and I look up and I said, did you reboot the computer? No. I said, you know what? I'm on a roll here with rebooting. Let's exit out of all your software, and let's do a reboot. I do a complete reboot, and oh my, after the reboot, she's working. I go back into where I sit in the engineering area. Engineer grabs me. I'm having trouble with my SurfCam software. And you can guess what my question was, did you reboot? And he's like, no. I said, exit out of SurfCam, exit out of everything, reboot. Guess what? It was working fine. So three problems solved in a few minutes by just rebooting everything. You gotta look at the basics. And I know I have clients that hate this when I say, did you reboot? And some of them get angry and said, of course I rebooted. I rebooted. That's why I'm calling you, because I rebooted. Then I have other clients that it never would occur to them to reboot. But you have to ask and you have to do it because it's so basic and it's so important to just get a clean reset. You know what? For those three problems, I don't care what the root cause, because they never came back. That was a couple weeks ago. They've never had that issue again. That's fine. I mean, as long as we solve the problem, is it luck? Maybe it's luck. You know, I've said this before. I forget what golfer I'm going to quote. And he said, you know, it's funny. The more I practice, the luckier I get on the golf course. You know, is it luck? I don't know about that. You just need to get to basics sometimes and make sure you're rebooting it, no matter how big the device is. And then take a look at what's going on and evaluate everything. I want to talk about my client that his hard drive failed a couple weeks ago, and I had to replace it and reinstall Outlook. One of the problems that he had after this was done, his autocomplete was missing. One of the things I found out that you can't do is take an existing PST that was from a couple weeks old, the backup, and extract that autocomplete file. I thought the NK2 utility, the NK2 edit from Nursoft, I thought I was going to be able to just point it to that PST and it would be able to extract, because now this is Outlook 2010. Outlook 2010, the autocomplete is now built into the PST, but you can't extract it. But here's what I could do. I was able to take his old hard drive, and I was very lucky. I mounted it on one of my devices that will, the SATA to USB. I plugged the drive in, so I go to his site. He still has the old hard drive. I plug it in, and I go to the files where those autocompletes are stored. Now, they're different. It's not an NK2 file anymore, but the NK2 edit can still read the autocomplete. I point the NK2 edit software to the directory where those autocomplete files are there. I import it into NK2 edit. There's his 900 autocompletes. I then pick the command to force it into the existing information store. That's the default PST that he's using for his Outlook, and that enabled his autocomplete to be finished. So I could not extract it from a PST. And the reason why I'm throwing it out there, I did a lot of research looking at this, and there's no utility, there's nothing in the world, at least that I was able to find, to extract the autocomplete information from a PST. Has anyone else ran into that? Maybe there's another utility out there that can grab it, but I certainly couldn't find it, and I couldn't find any information. So I was lucky enough to get back to the directory where they were stored on the old hard drive, and then I was able to get it, import it, and then force it into his current PST. So now it's there. I think if I, and remember, I had to rebuild the PST from scratch because I couldn't use the existing one, because I was erroring out. That was the problem. So I couldn't begin his new install with an existing PST. Had I done that, we wouldn't have had the problem with the autocomplete missing. So if you're lucky enough or able to successfully take the existing PST and have that as the primary PST, well, you have your autocomplete. But since we were starting from scratch, I had to go back to that file. Just something that I had never ran into before. I wanted to share that. I had an interesting iCloud problem the last update for iCloud caused the following. I got the little software update pop-up from Apple, told me that iCloud needed to be updated. I was like, sure. So I closed all the software. I let it do the update. After I did the reboot, Outlook would not start. I tried everything. I rebooted a couple times. I even tried Outlook in safe mode. Now I'm getting worried that, well, I looked and I was like, well, I had a Shadow Protect backup last night, so I have all my PSTs and I have everything updated. I would just have to reinstall Outlook or something and do a repair. I was looking at all this and I said, maybe if I just uninstall iCloud, reboot, start up Outlook and see where I'm at. Outlook worked. So I don't know if there was something wrong with the download. Did something get corrupt? Did something happen? Although I wasn't notified of any error. But I just wanted to make you aware of this last iCloud update. It caused a major problem with me with Outlook. Now, I was kind of afraid to try it again, but I was like, I need I have to have iCloud working because that's how I sync my calendar and contacts from all of my iDevices to Outlook. I use iCloud for that. I went to the website and bypassed the auto update from the Apple software. I went to the website, downloaded the latest version because I have the version before. And I figured, worst case, I could always go back to the old version and then not upgrade because maybe there's just a problem with the new version. I ran the new version and it worked and it started syncing and I had to start from scratch because it had to rebuild my contacts and my calendar. I don't mind that. Once I uninstalled iCloud, those two folders or those two, my main contacts for iCloud and my main calendars for iCloud were totally gone, but they're still up on the Apple server for iCloud, and they're still on my iPhone 6, my iPad Air, and my iPad Mini. Once I reinstalled the new version, it was able to update everything, and it was working. But I just wanted to throw that out there with the last iCloud problem. I don't know if anybody else has had an issue with that, but beware of anything like that when it's doing an auto update. Before you do the updates, make sure you have a good backup of everything. Make sure if you're doing an update for even something as simple as Evernote, do you have a backup of your Evernote database? Little things like that. FileZilla, there's tons of updates. But what if they screw something up and it gets really messy? Make sure you do that export of all of your sites in FileZilla before you do an upgrade. My birthday was November 17th. It was celebrated on the 15th. And my wife bought me the Logitech Harmony Ultimate Home. This was on the advice of my oldest son when she was looking for something for me. He was with me, helping me with the client that I talked about, the Logitech that I set up. And he remembered me saying, this version was okay, but I would have preferred the better version, the more expensive one, because that has the little base that interfaces with your devices from an IR blast so you can hide your devices and you can still get to the control. It also interfaces with your iPhone and your smartphones to be able to control everything. That's a nice feature. I mentioned that to him, and it's funny, she went and bought that. So Saturday night, the 15th, after our celebration, we had a dual birthday celebration because it was also my wife's birthday is on the 9th. To make it easy on the families, we combine our birthdays sometime like in the middle between her birthday and my birthday. We have so many birthdays. My son Tyler turned 21 on November 21st. So now it's quiet. Everybody's gone. Everything's done. And I'm going to set up this device. The reason why I mention it, there's a significant difference between the Harmony One, where you just have the universal remote and the base for charging it, and then you have a cable to sync to your computer. Now you get all that with the Ultimate Home, but now you get this other base that you need to give it a power source, and then you have two cables with two little blaster units that you could put in front of or in an area that's going to, you're going to send the signal to change by turning a device on, turning it off. Here's what I found. I had no problem setting this up. Now, I've always had problems with these things. This worked beautiful because it was all done via my iPhone. And I thought that was very interesting. The only time I had a sync was the initial sync of the hand unit. It had to do a sync to do a firmware upgrade and then some initial settings and a couple other things. And that took a while, but it did finally work. Once that worked, I now do all my changes on the iPhone for setting up any devices, for adding a device, adding an activity. And then I can go right to my phone and say, I can go right to the handset, click sync. And if I made any changes, it'll automatically sync. That's something you can't do with the other version. This makes making changes and adjustments very easy. So I'm giving a thumbs up to an expensive Christmas present. If you have someone with a lot of remotes and you want the ultimate, and this, they just changed the firmware. They pulled some of the older versions that look just like this, but they now have a slightly new name. It's a slightly changed model number, but it's the same price. I'm going to make sure I have the specific link to Amazon for this exact device, and I'm going to say the name of it again very carefully. It is the Logitech Harmony Ultimate Home, and unfortunately, it's $350. But for the geek that has in your life that has many, many remote controls and you want to do some really cool programming and setting up activities so everything changes on one button, it makes it very easy. My wife can now come into this room and not have to worry about making sure you got the right source on the TV. Everybody knows what I'm talking about here. Making sure the Bose speakers gets turned on and making sure that the Verizon cable box of a Fios box gets turned on. There's like four things that you would have to do to watch TV in my house right here. And now you could just hit one button that I programmed watch TV. I have another one that's called watch the Western Digital because I have the Western Digital TV hub, which is my media device. The PlayStation 4, you still can't remote control, but I'm working on that, and that's going to be a future topic. There are third-party remotes that I'm testing, and if I get one of these to work properly with the Logitech Harmony, I will report back on that because that's something that not only me, but my client who has the PS4 is looking for a solution, so I want to make sure that I solve that. This week and last week, a problem that I've been working on with this client with the high-end house and the home theater, the TV that he has is a Samsung ultra-high-def 4K 65-inch curve. And a friend of mine who builds computers built a home theater PC for me to resell to him and hook up. What a nightmare. We tested this device. He tested it on his 55-inch Samsung, tested it on an HDMI monitor, a DVI monitor. There's been no problems. So I had a mini DVI. There was a high-end NVIDIA card, which only had three ports on it. And the only one I really cared about was the mini HDMI. And that had to go to a regular HDMI on the TV. Well, first, we're actually really going through a Marantz receiver and then to the TV. I tried every cable known to man. I couldn't understand why I was not getting a picture on the TV. I made sure the TV firmware was upgraded. I made sure the Marantz firmware was upgraded. So then I eliminated the Marantz out of the equation and went directly to the TV. Here's the funny story now. Going through all of this and trying different cables and not getting a picture on the TV, and this is brand new TV, I go to another Samsung 40 inch in the house and I have the same problem. So I'm texting back and forth to the person who built this, and he's like, Mike, this has to work. There's something else going on there. And I tried everything. This was multiple visits. On our last visit, and this was Monday night, and by the way, it was why there was no tech vets, that there was possibly going to be a tech vets, because I was actually working on this problem. So Monday night, I finally hook an Ethernet cable up because I wanted to just start Googling more. Even Samsung tech support said, in order to get this to work, you have to pick the HDMI that you have, and you got to make sure that you're connected to the one that's marked /DVI. You got to highlight that and change its name. And while you're changing the name of the HDMI of where it is in the source, it does something that changes the frequency or changes something that that makes the resolution work. I said, really? So I tried that. I was all excited after Samsung told me that. Nope. That didn't work. Here's what worked, and I finally solved everything. I plugged the Ethernet cable in, and anybody who has an NVIDIA card knows this, that it, when it gets a chance, it goes out. If you have it set up correctly, it'll go look for driver updates. Told me there was a driver update popped up in the corner. I was like, I have nothing to lose here. So I let it go through the install, did a reboot. I said to my son here, he was helping me, I said, let's hook up a cable and just give it a try. Came right up. I couldn't believe it. Gorgeous resolution. And this was on the 40-inch Samsung. So we took everything up and took it, and I took the original cable, which was mini HDMI to HDMI, ran that cable, and it didn't matter what port I was plugging in. I plugged it into the first HDMI. It was beautiful. Now, will it work through the Marantz receiver? Plugged it into the Marantz. Clicked on the option for the Marantz, because remember, I have all of this programmed into the Logitech Harmony remote. Worked beautiful. I then created an action on the remote, so this way it would set everything up appropriately for when they want to watch the home theater. Now, one of the advantages, and why I really wanted it to work over the mini HDMI connection, is because I'm going to get video and sound over that connection. If I used the DVI connection, then I would have had to run another cable, like optical from there. Luckily, there was an onboard optical port, and then I would have had to run that to the optical of the Marantz. Now, I was lucky, and I was prepared to do that. Just in case I got the DVI working, now I got the optical cable working. If you embark upon consulting in the audio-video realm like this in some high-end home media rooms or home theater, be prepared to have the life force sucked out of you from time, because this stuff is very time-consuming in making sure everything works. And you got to have so many different cables and adapters. It's unbelievable. And you just got to make sure the main thing is mapping it all out that it works. And I did that and did the proper homework and still ended up going through all of this effort. And this weekend, I'm going to be putting together my invoice, and I certainly can't bill for all of these hours that I'm going to bill for some of them. And that's what I'm going to try to figure out, what's fair. And one thing I know, I have a client that is extremely fair. And anytime I've ever presented him with an invoice, I've never gotten pushback. And that's what's great. And I want to keep that relationship that way. So I don't want to take advantage of it. So he knows I spent a lot of time, and I want to make sure I adjust it where I believe it's fair for me and fair for him. So I have one more tip before I get to the voicemails. This is a command that I've never ran into, and I've come across this in the How to Geek Guide. This is how to uninstall your Windows product key before you sell your PC. Or maybe you're transferring it from one PC to another. I've never done this on Windows 7. It works. I tested this. This command, where you open your command prompt as an administrator and you run the SL manager/DLV, and this will reveal all of, you get a nice little pop-up, a Windows script host runs, and you get a pop-up of the information on your product key. And then there's another command that you run where you use some of that information and you can't cut and paste it. That's something I noticed. It brought it up where I had to write the key down. Then you can run the command again with another command line option and then this long key, and you can successfully uninstall your product key. Now you can go to the other computer, run the command with another option and the actual product key, and it'll say installed product key successfully, and you'll have, and it'll list the product key. Very cool little command that I never realized that was built into the operating system that I thought I would share with you. And I think it's going to come in handy for someone in the chat here who's going to be upgrading his system from a regular hard drive to an SSD, and he might want to do this. So the first voicemail is from Martin from the Podnuts Network. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike, this is Martin Abando from the Geeksters on the Podnuts Network. And I just have a suggestion or a comment that I wanted to bring out to you. A couple times you've talked about using multiple wireless access points to increase your range at a site. What about the thoughts of using something like Powerline adapters? And these are the adapters that you plug into power outlets, and you can plug in one end of a Cat5 cable into one, and then it basically just runs the Ethernet through your power, through your home. I've used them many times in many different locations, especially in places where I need to run a cable but don't have the ability to actually run a physical cable. Powerline adapters, I get the ones from TP-Link usually. Check them out. They may be a saver whenever you can't run a physical cable, you need some kind of a connection. All right, thanks again. This is Martin Abando from the Geeksters on the Podnuts Network.
Great idea. Now, for this particular project, that might not, it's not really an option. I needed Wi-Fi more than I needed a single connection, but that could have definitely saved on running an additional Ethernet line to the area that I needed to get to. I do not embrace power line networking enough. I had a client a long time ago where I couldn't believe I seen Comcast install that in a very difficult place. I've never seen a cable company like that use power line networking to get from point A to point B. And I seen that and I was like, wow, I was really impressed. I have not embraced it enough and I really should. And you're right. I mean, to me, I guess nothing beats that Cat6 cable going from point A to point B. I feel it, touch it, smell it. It's reliable. And I might be too old school for that, but you're right. I need to embrace power line networking and at least look and check its reliability. I think you should take a look at that. It may work in your area as an option. Certainly consider that, and you might be able to improve getting some faster speeds to an area that you wouldn't normally get there, that you are not going to be able to run a cable. I always look to run the cable first as an option because I know it's just more reliable, and I don't know if there's any kind of packet loss issues because of the power lines and how is the electrical done in that area of that office or that house. I just don't know. And that's why I guess it's an uncertainty that I never wanted to put my client as the guinea pig for testing. But we really should look into that as a viable option. So, Martin, thank you very, very much for that voicemail. This is a problem from a listener, Elliot, a video problem that I'm going to give some suggestions.
Hey, Mike, my name is Elliot. I'm from Chicago. I watch and listen to your podcast and also Kerry Holtzman. I have an issue with my desktop. It comes on, but there's no display on the monitor. I tried reseating the memory and added a video card. It's brand new. However, it still possesses to see nothing on the monitor. Is that a clear indication of it needs a new motherboard?
A couple things that I want you to try. One, I know when you tried another video card, are we talking that the original video card was on the motherboard? If that's the case, sometimes you have to go to the BIOS and change where you want the video. So you have to disable the onboard video or tell it that you want to use a PCI Express slot or whatever slot that that's going to be in. So it depends on your BIOS. You want to look at that. Before we go any further, did you take the monitor and move it to another computer and see that the monitor's working? Are you getting the power lights? Are you getting, is the system booting? Do you hear the computer go through the boot options and make the proper noises? Are the fans working? I'm not willing to just write off the motherboard yet, although it could be a bad motherboard. You got to do some more additional testing. And maybe you have, and you just didn't include it in the voicemail. I'm not sure. But take the monitor to another machine, the video card, double check the BIOS. Now, I got a question. Can you even get into the BIOS? You know, can you see it with the video? You might not have an option to be able to do that, you know, if there is an onboard, if there is a problem with the motherboard. Reseating the memory, that was fine. Make sure that the power supply is working and that everything's powering up. Do you get beeps? Are there any warning beeps happening on boot up on the posting of the system starting? You might get some additional information that way. But Elliot, please let me know, follow up. Let me know what happened with the situation and did any of my suggestions help? That's it for tonight's show. No email. I was looking at how long it's taken so far to get through everything. I still have more stories, and I will include them in the next show. And I promise I will get to the email on the next show. I got a great stack of some great feedback from all of you. Keep the emails coming. And remember, and I'm recording this today on Black Friday. Please, I hope everybody that is buying from Amazon and taking advantage of all these great deals and buying for the holidays, make sure to use my Amazon link, amazon.micnation.net. Actually, I think Chevrolet, if anybody's buying any cars, you are getting a $1,000 Amazon gift card. Boy, if you're in that situation and you got that, use amazon.micnation.net to spend it. This way, your price is the same, but I'll get a small percentage commission for that sale, and it helps support the show. And I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. All right. I will be back December 11th for the next live show, and it will be same time, same channel, Thursday night, 8 o'clock. Thank you so much for downloading and staying subscribed and supporting the show. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.